We get on our plane, supposed to leave at 5:30. We sit down, I kind of fall asleep. Like, I wake up, like, oh, we're at the gate. I'm like, oh, brilliant flight. Like, I fell asleep the whole time. We're back in Denver. We went on our plane. There was some weather. Then we drove around.
Oh,
we had an issue.
Oh, no.
Like 2 hours, we came back to the gate in Denver.
Who broke the news to you? Who was the one that said, sorry, bro, we're actually, gone anywhere?
I was sitting next to my colleague, Tony Luffman.
I want to talk to Tony just to find out how satisfying that moment was for him. We haven't gone anywhere, Johnny. Hello, folks, and welcome to Got Your Back, NHL edition, LeBron, Rashog, and MJ. Today, we're going to dive into the first couple of games of the Stanley Cup Final, talk about news and notes going on around the National Hockey League, a big three-way trade that happened just the other day. We'll break that down and discuss all the other happenings around the league. And, of course, as always, Got Your Back. NHL Edition brought to you by Cross Country Canada Supplies and Rentals, where they provide equipment and supplies to all facets of the Canadian construction industry. But what sets them apart is their get-her-done attitude. It's a core value of their company. They live by it every single day. They want to make sure they bend over backwards for their clientele. No excuses. They take great pride in that attitude, and we are proud to have them as title sponsors here on Got Your Back. Planes, trains, and automobiles, not an easy travel final. You guys remember the glorious days when the NHL would throw that charter together? Oh. And all the media would just herd onto the charter. You'd start in Edmonton. Pierre, you'd step off in Carolina, and life was a lot easier.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, for hockey fans listening, oh, first world problems. These guys are covering the cup final. I get it. Oh. But it is, you know, I mean, I did the red eye from Vegas through Atlanta, landed around 11 a.m. yesterday. I don't know what day it is now. But yeah, lack of direct flights for everyone covering this final. By the way, the league did internally talk about whether or not to bring back the media charter for this cup final, but ultimately, again, decided that the cost didn't warrant it. So it is what it is.
I tell you what, it's funny, Johnny, because, yeah, I had a tough travel day, but whatever. I got in about 3 in the morning last night, but it's all good. It's no problem at all. But it's funny because I was lamenting, like, why are we taking 2 days between every travel break, right? I'm like, we don't need this. Like, the players are rested. Let's just play for games 5, 6, and 7, especially. Let's just go every other day. And we had Alex Pietrangelo on media day, and he's like, oh, you changed, Johnny. It's been too long since you played. I'm like, what? No.
You've forgotten.
Yeah.
You have forgotten.
And he was saying the players absolutely like the 2 days between. They like the 4 hour, whatever it is, 5 hour flight. They like, they want the time to get their bodies quite right when they switch spots. So I'm like, right, well, I mean, I guess. But then I was like, what? You guys are chartering. Like, you basically can sleep on a bed during those 4 hours if you want in those planes that they have now. But the players are on board with the longer breaks between, because it is a bit of a it's a longer flight than some.
You have changed. You wouldn't feel that way if Matthew Tkachuk was giving you 10 to 15 gloved punches to the nose
seriously
on a game night. You know,
he's been like a sparring partner. He's been like a heavy bag for Chucky all series long, rabbit punches. Yeah,
exactly.
From game one. Boy, but he's kept his cool. Yeah. As has Vegas.
He has. All right, we'll get to the Stanley Cup final in a little bit. By the way, we're all golf guys. So, I do want to get your reaction on the news yesterday. So, the PGA Tour.
Unreal.
Off the soapbox and
crazy.
Into bed with the LIV Tour. Unbelievable that after all of the posturing and the hand-wringing and the public statements and from Jay Monahan, the moral high ground that they felt they had, and shame on you to all the players that went across, out of the blue. Oof. The PGA Tour does a deal with LIV, Johnny. I mean, you've been in a league where you pay a commissioner, right? And you have somebody that's there that's supposed to be in charge of things. What are the players thinking today?
And then somehow Monahan walked himself into being the CEO of this new group. Like, I don't know. So, like, what makes it so difficult to stomach is the fact that you preached this moral high ground, as you meant. Like, we are, you know, like, you invoked, you know, 9/11 and their families and, like, you know, all the stuff. You had your athletes out there doing the same, suspending. We could never have them back. You know, all the statements about being embarrassed about where you play and getting in bed with people who sanction murder of journalists and all this human rights abuses, women rights, all this stuff. And then to backdoor it. Like, you didn't even, like, the players who were out there on the front line saying, never, we could never do that. And then they find out on social media. I could not believe it. I will say this though, Pierre, not the same sort of social dynamic to it. I was in a lockout in 04. Right. We were told over and over, we'll never take a salary cap. Over and over. We had guys saying, I'll never play. I'd rather retire than play in a league with a salary cap. And we woke up one morning with a 24% rollback and a cap offer. And we didn't know.
Yeah.
Like we were blindsided, not by our executive, because you know they were empowered to make that decision. And it's a bad, bad feeling.
Things happen in boardrooms.
I would have loved to be a fly on the wall that Monahan chat with his constituents yesterday in Toronto.
And just going back to that 04 thing, I was involved in the reporting on that in the middle of the night. People often forget this part of it. The PA finally saying yes to a salary cap happened after they canceled the entire season. So it was really at this point about, are we sitting out a second year? And it happened right before a Board of Governors meeting, or same week of a Board of Governors meeting in New York. I remember being woken up at 3 a.m. in my hotel room. And, you know, the PA's accepted a cap. It's one of those moments that you'll never forget, because it was so huge. And there were some players who felt betrayed. But obviously at that point, and leadership had started to shift, Bob Goodenow was kind of getting pushed out. It was pretty messy on the player side. But the bottom line, though, MJ, you were still a player, is that I think the reality is a lot of players were not ready to sit out 2 years. That's where that went. On the golf thing, I will say this. I was happy that LIV came along, because I think for the rank and file golf players, not for the top guys, are making money, but for the rank and file, you know, it forced the PGA Tour into so many improvements. As a byproduct, which I think is good for guys really living from week to week. You know, we all think of golf as this, it's not the same for everyone, right? And so that was positive, but I just assumed that naively that LIV would just go away eventually, because it didn't make any sense, and then the PGA Tour would be better for it. I did not see this coming whatsoever.
Yeah, but there's all this litigation, right? And LIV being willing to just tie things up forever in litigation, and lots of, I mean, I'm sure there's risk there and stuff, but I'm going to play the most poignant clip from Jay Monahan. And keep in mind, this is the guy that just hopped into bed with LIV, the guy who said this not so long ago.
As it relates to the families of 9/11, I have two families that are close to me that lost loved ones. And so my heart goes out to them. And I would ask, you know, any player that has left, or any player that would ever consider leaving, have you ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour?
Oh, and then you volunteer them for service with LIV. You put them in a position where they basically have no choice.
John,
I mean, we do a segment called Red Card, Yellow Card, No Card. There's no point in even doing the segment. No. I mean, this is just hard red cards across the board, hey boys?
What if you're Rory McIlroy, the face of the PGA Tour? Man, you've been so public in your defense of PGA Tour and loyalty and history and the human rights component of this. And then you're like blindsided. It's just, I don't know how the players...
How about the guys that turned down the money, Johnny? You're a finance guy. The guys that could have gone over for, you know, $100 million.
The guy that took the most criticism, and a guy whose legacy is probably tarnished because of it, Phil Mickelson. That right? I mean, you have to call it what it is. I mean...
Well, the thing is, guys, we can talk about the money, and you can change your negotiating stance, but it's the morality play that they were going with. That is where there is no real stepping back.
They went all
that.
In, man. Yeah.
You can't push those chips in. We don't believe in the money. We don't believe in the system. We don't believe in the competition. But when you go down the moral high ground road, I don't know how Monahan still has a job when this is all said and done. I do not know how he will be the CEO or whatever he's going to be called for this new organization. I have no idea.
Without knowing anything, MJ, I bet you that he's insulated himself pretty well, where if they want to fire him, they'll have to pay him.
Of course.
Because he would have been right in there in the negotiations and in prime position to carve himself out a nice little
real quick, Shaggy. It kind of also reminded me, though, the players clearly in the dynamic or whatever, like the constitution of this PGA Tour gave that kind of power that he was able to do this without anyone else signing off on it. Any player knowing about it, again, it reminds me of the PA where we keep so much trust to our to our PA leader that he was able to do things without ever really kind of involving the membership. And the fact that Monahan could do that, some of that falls on the players because they signed up for an arrangement where he was able to have that much power.
Yeah,
and sounds like that system needs a revamp.
And that unfortunately is kind of reality when you're, I think, a player in these sports and leagues where, you know, it's a pretty small group of players that ended up deciding that they were hiring Marty Walsh as the new executive director of the PA. And, you know, I think so far from what I can tell, they made a pretty good choice. But my point is, you can't run these things through 750 players. You have to sure. trust the executive, the search committee, the executive board. This is always how these things are run, is that, you know, when people complain after the fact, it's like, well, have you spent time as a player rep? Did you want to be part of the search committee? I mean, at the end of the day, you have to put in the time at that
right,
level.
Right, but this negotiation, Pierre, I think, was done with Monahan and two others from the mm-hmm. tour, is what I was reading this morning, mm-hmm. and the player representation was just zip. Right. So it sounds like that whole system needs to be revamped. Okay, our sponsors are going, you guys, this is a hockey podcast. What the heck?
That was a pretty big story.
It was crazy.
It's unbelievable.
It was mind-blowing.
I'll finish with this Monahan clip from yesterday. Here he was.
For players, I'm not surprised that you know, this is an awful lot to ask them to digest.
No.
And this is a significant change for us, you know, in the direction that we were going down.
A significant change in the direction we were going down. You think? Anyways, guys, let's get to takeaways brought to you by our good friends at Kuma Outdoor Gear, where they've got a wide range of gear to fit all your outdoor needs. Tents and sleeping bags, travel games, pet products, drinkware. They got their new switchback heated chair. Football season is coming, and if you're a tailgater, you have to check out what Kuma Outdoor Gear has. I was at their shop last week, and every chair I sat down in was comfortable. They figured out a way to take uncomfortable chairs, which is, you know, the camping chair, and make them comfortable. They've done a great job, so highly encourage you to check out Kuma Outdoor Gear. Let's start with the very complicated trade that happened in the National Hockey League yesterday. I had to read it probably 4 to 5 times to fully comprehend all of the pieces. But Johnny, the basics here, Ivan Provorov to Columbus, Cal Peterson, Sean Walker, Helge Granz, first round pick, second round pick, conditional picks, going to Philadelphia, LA, Kevin Connaughton, Hayden Hodgson, and 30% of Ivan Provorov's contract. What stands out to me here, Johnny, is that for Daniel Briere, this isn't exactly, you know, a second for a third round pick to kind of get his feet wet on the trade front. Like, he did some complex algebra on his first deal here. And what does it signal for the Flyers?
So a couple different things stand out. Well done, Danny. All those years of Danny and I being roommates, all that math talk I had with him has finally paid off. So good for my man, DB.
That's all you, man. That's all you.
Yeah, clearly. So I think what it tells me is that the Flyers are reloading. Like, they're in one of those teams now that they're going to leverage salary cap space. They're good players. They're going to buy picks, trade for picks, and continue to try to turn the entire team over. So, Provorov has kind of been on the block a little while, trying to find that right combination of assets to bring back for him. A lot of picks, a few players as well. So for Philly, it tells me they're rebuilding. And then, of course, the question mark is, like, you know, Matt Walker, okay, whatever, defensive, he can play on the team. Peterson, is that just to buy more picks, or is that something to do with their own goaltending situation? Because Carter Hart could potentially be on the block as well. So that's the first thing that comes up from the Philadelphia perspective, Pierre, for me.
Yeah, and I think the Peterson, first of all, Danny Briere, as far as his first trade as a Flyers GM, you know, pretty impressive move, but more to come. The Flyers are listening on Carter Hart. As of last night, there was nothing imminent, but they are listening, so let's see where that goes. The Peterson thing can go either way. You know, on the surface, that was a way to weaponize their cap space and take a bad contract off the hands of the Kings, but you know, maybe they get him back to his form. I mean, this is a guy that obviously earned that contract to begin with, by the way he looked a few years ago. So an interesting gamble there for the Flyers. I thought Rob Blake did a pretty good job too. It usually have to pay a higher price to clear cap space in this environment since the pandemic. And it essentially, you know, cost him a second round pick and a few other assets. But really, now he can sign Gavrikov, try and sign Gavrikov as of late last night. he had re-engaged, I'm told, with the representation, Dan Milstein, for Vladislav Gavrikov, and they were trying to get him signed. They really want to keep him all along. It was never supposed to be about a rental acquisition for LA when they got Gavrikov. They really had designs on him being a fixture on that left side in their top four for a few more years. So they're working on that extension as we speak. We'll see if they can get it done. And listen, you know, the Blue Jackets, it's hard to lure free agents to Columbus, although Johnny Gaudreau ended up there last summer. But to get a top four defenseman, and they hope that he regains his form from a couple years ago, that's just a more direct route for the Blue Jackets to get a guy like Provorov, as opposed to waiting into free agency. You know, and it doesn't come without controversy. Obviously, Provorov's stance on Pride Night, you know, they'll have to deal with that for sure. But the hockey part of it, I mean, I think Columbus feels that they got a legit top four guy, which is hard for them to do. And they needed that on that blue line.
No question he's a good player, Johnny. Mm-hmm. But Pierre mentioned the Pride Night stuff. And then if you're someone in Columbus, you're like, the Blue Jackets are in the news lots. I'm going to take a look at everything they've done lately. And you Google Mike Babcock. So you got Babcock and Provorov coming into the organization here. Both of them, listen, have been in the news for different reasons. What do you think of the optics of potentially adding those two players within, you know, the course of a week or so? Or two guys, sorry.
Well, I mean, if you're a Columbus fan, you probably see the upside to it. Like, they're both good hockey, successful people. Mm-hmm. Mike Babcock's got a great resume that he's had in his career. And you overlook this stuff. So Ivan Provorov's been a really top-flight defenseman. A couple of years where I almost scored 20 goals. And you overlook any concerns you might have about his willingness to participate in inclusivity promotion or activities or endeavors. If you are not a Blue Jacket fan, you say, I think to Pierre's point, and how do you phrase this properly, but, you know, Columbus has to be more aggressive to try to get players or names of that caliber into their organization. And maybe that comes with some baggage. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but some other question marks beyond just the hockey stuff. And they're willing to take that on because they want the stuff on the ice more so than they're worried about the stuff that's off the ice. And that's maybe a function of the market and also the decisions they're making as an organization, Pierre. But, you know, if you're a fan, you probably sort of, you may look past some of these things if you're, or maybe not, and you might have some questions, but clearly Columbus is not, you know, they're focused on the on ice product and not the other stuff, Pierre.
And it also kind of cements where we thought the Blue Jackets were headed as far as not retooling, not rebuilding. I mean, once they signed Johnny Gaudreau last summer, despite having a terrible year that got them in the lottery, it was never about, okay, maybe we need to take a longer-term view. No, they want to win right now. And so this trade underlines that. You know, they want to get pieces around Lainey and Gaudreau. They want to improve their blue line. So I suspect Jarmo Kekalainen is not done. I mean, this is a right now offseason for Columbus. They want to get right back. Remember, the year before, they had a decent year. They finished ninth, I think, in ninth or tenth in the East and surprised a lot of people. So they feel that they're a better team than they show this year.
So you brought up Carter Hart's name, and you wonder what's next for Daniel Briere and the Flyers, if they're going to, how deep the cuts will go and how much dismantling they will do. Keep in mind, Carter Hart was part of the 2018 World Junior team. Commissioner Gary Bettman just saying the other day that the investigation into that situation has wrapped up, and maybe we'll be hearing more on that in the weeks to come. You wonder if teams that are considering a trade for, frankly, anybody that was part of that, might wait until those results come out and there's a little bit more information. So you wonder if that potentially stalls things a little bit. Other areas on the trade front I want to get to, Pierre, because we're within the vicinity of the draft, and we know that's where the trades really get rocking and rolling. Some news on Alex DeBrincat. The situation the Senators put themselves in here, when they traded for this player, I think a lot of people went, what about, because the price was high and we all knew what the contract was. And now they're in a position to be looking to move this player. So big picture, do you think the trade still makes sense? And what does this look like?
We should be careful. Maybe move the player. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think basically...
What's the indication he's going to re-sign?
Basically all options are on the table. Well, I mean, you also have the option of having him for another year, is what I'm saying. So but obviously a trade is possible. You know, what has affected this situation too is that what we've heard from their camp throughout the season is, you know, let's see what happens with the sale of the team and the impact that has on the direction of the team so that we can have more clarity ourselves. And what has happened here, I guess, to some degree, is that the sale of the team is still not done. And so, you know, how long would, you know, Gary Bettman said a couple more weeks, but even after they announced a winning bid, there's still another process of how long it takes to completely finalize the sale, right? So, you know, is Pierre Dorion stay on as GM? You know, there's so many different things that will be impacted by the sale of the team.
I would just say this, two thoughts, guys. One thing we don't often see teams do is take players to arbitration and then cut their salary, right? If their salary is high enough, then you can take, I think, 10 or 15% off their salary. And you could take DeBrincat, his $9 million qualifier, and say, actually, you know what? We're going to pay you whatever that would be, you know, $8 million, a little bit less, to bring you back for the 1 year as we try to work toward an extension, which, not surprisingly, you guys, if I was a GM, I would use that as often as I could. But I also think, you know, if he's not willing to re-sign there, he's a pretty significant asset. Ottawa wants to be good. They have a lot of good forwards. They maybe have needs elsewhere. Mm-hmm. If you come to the conclusion, you know, it's just not going to work because of finances, or maybe he doesn't want to stay in Ottawa, which is entirely his right, then I would be proactive in trying to look at these options sooner than later, because Ottawa they can't wait anymore. Like, they have to go now to be good. There's no more years for this group to kind of build towards something. It's got to happen now. So there's no point in having a player on there that you could trade for something that could help you more in the future.
Yeah. I mean, the only other option would be if you don't think you can sign him long term, is wait until the trade deadline next season to move him.
But it almost gets tougher though, Pierre, because then you've had a guy, let's say he's having a great year. It's and let's say Ottawa's around the playoffs or in the playoffs.
Right.
It's almost harder to make that deal and pull a guy out of your team in the middle of the season. Even if you can make the actual trade, it's just, you know, logistically, or like, you look at it, kind of hard to pull off because you're taking someone like Johnny Gaudreau was 2 years ago with Calgary. You know, like, it's hard to pull good players off of good teams,
if you did that, you would be saying, you know, maybe he'll have more value at that time. But if he has more value at that time, it's because he's helped your team tremendously.
Right, right. Because you want him.
You don't want to trade him if you're anywhere near the playoff hunt for that organization. And
you also wonder real quick, ownership. Like, the ownership thing is a real thing. Like, if he's going to get signed to a $70 million contract, right, like, can Pierre Dorion pull that trigger right now? I mean, I'm assuming he can, but I wonder if he's been advised to wait on that kind of deal.
I think it's really had an impact on all this. Tricky. No question about it.
Yeah.
What do you think this means in the bigger picture, trade-wise, Pierre? Sometimes one happens and then we start to see more dominoes fall. But there are names out there this year. Hellebuck, Scheifele, Carlson, Dubois, Besser. Like, there are some juicy names on the trade block.
Just named half Winnipeg's roster.
I could have kept going.
Winnipeg's definitely going to be an action team. Yeah, no, I think that the next 4 weeks and beyond, I mean, just because I'm going on vacation July 2nd for the summer doesn't mean there won't be trades after that. But but the reason I think it's going to be pretty busy is because I think the quality of player available on the trade market is above, generally speaking, what's available for free on July 1st. It's not an incredible year for UFAs. So right. There's some good names. I don't want to, but generally speaking, I think the trade route will augment your roster in a more impactful way if you're a team. So yeah, it's going to be busy.
Patrick Waugh consideration in Ottawa, Johnny. Sorry, I want to circle around back there. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think of Patrick Waugh here? How he's viewed as a candidate?
So, I mean, he had a tough end to his time in Colorado. There's no question, but I think enough time has passed from that. I think it's like 7 years ago that, you know, you could look past that, look to the resume, look to the kind of coach you would be, the kind of arrangement you could have, and say, if his name was, you know, John Smith, and a guy had just lit up the CHL and done a great job with the best team and wanted to get to the NHL, of course he would be the top coaching prospect. The only reason why there's question marks is because he's Patrick Waugh and because of what happened at the end in Colorado. Anybody else in his exact situation who's done what he just did would be of interest to anyone looking for a coach. You know, it just is his playing resume, I guess, is the question mark. I think enough time has passed that you can kind of figure out what happened in 2016 and why he left so abruptly and why that wouldn't happen. You sort out how much power and control he has and make sure that it works. And then the only challenge for me is that I think it makes more sense for him to go into a relatively good team than a poor team. And most, it's usually the poor teams that want new coaches. Bad, by poor, I mean bad. And I played on a bad team with Wayne Gretzky as my coach. It's a weird dynamic when the best, most important person in the organization is the coach. It's just like a weird thing for the players. And that would be the case if he went into some organization. So, Pierre, I think if you're one of those teams, if you're the Rangers or if you're Calgary or a team that is looking for, or not Calgary anymore, but if you're if you're Ottawa, you want to consider something, it's worth looking at Patrick Roy and understand what happened in 2016. He clearly is a pretty good coach at this point. So I think that warrants a look.
Well, the first thing is, it used to be you weren't sure, like, does he really want to come back or is he just dipping his toes and seeing if anyone's interested? He really wants to come back. I mean, he hired a new representation. Mm-hmm. He interviewed in Columbus. I don't know if we mentioned that. He did interview with Yermo Kekalainen in Columbus before Columbus decided to go to Mike Babcock route. Ottawa's interesting. I think, again, first of all, there's still a coach in Ottawa, DJ Smith, who's a pretty good coach. But again, it comes down to new ownership. Which group gets in? What do they want to do? I mean, again, it's so hard to pinpoint where this is all headed with the Senators based on what happens with the sale. But that would be a pretty big splash. I always wonder, again, speaking of guys who are still coaches, Sheldon Keefe is still the coach in Toronto. But imagine if Brad Treliving ultimately decided to make a change and he spoke to Patrick Roy. I'm just telling you, Habs fans and Leaf fans, how much fun would that be?
Wow. Listen to you.
Wow.
Listen to
Stir
you.
Stir it up. Stir we'll get it that on Twitter. Up, Pierre.
Zuby, there's our Twitter promo right there. We're just going to circle that. What's the time code?
I'm not saying
on
there's
that?
Any 2014. Chance. I'm just saying it'd be fun.
Wouldn't that be interesting? That's good stuff. Johnny, thoughts on Cole Caulfield's extension coming in kind of right under that Nick Suzuki number? Maybe some respect shown there. What do you make when they do that? When they very obviously do that?
I wouldn't. And if you're my buddy, Shoggy, you should be happy if I go over top of you. Like, that's what true buddies do. You should be like, yeah, I make more than me. But clearly he obliged to the internal cap. He said, I'm not going to go over my captain. And they are very good friends. Like, they hang out all the time. They're seen all the time together every summer. So I think that was a nice gesture. I don't think it probably would have been mandatory. He probably could have tried to push it. I mean, what's $25,000 a year when you're talking about $8 million? Nothing if he wanted it. But I do think that is a good precedent-setting gesture. And one more thought about the contract is that $8 million roughly for Cole Caulfield. He's already scored at like a 40-45 goal pace under Marty St. Louis. So even if he scores like 35 to 40 a year, in today's climate, that's worth $8 million. You're locking up his best years. He did that while having a bum shoulder already. So I'm not worried about the shoulder surgery. He had a bad shoulder and was scoring that way. And the fact remains, signing young players to long-term deals makes sense. It's a lot of sense when you're in an environment where the salary cap is about to go up. Because then their percentage of the cap that they have this year, which is around, just under 10%, is going to go steadily down by quite a bit over the next 4 years. And we know the cap in 4 years, probably going to be 95. Or something in that range, 93, 95. And it's going to make a lot more sense. So this is when the value of a Draisaitl contract, you lock him in early, cap goes up, and then it's all of a sudden, that's way more affordable years, 5, 6, 7, 8. And that's what Montreal has done with Suzuki. Now, the teams that didn't luck out that way, or whatever, Toronto, because of the pandemic and everything else, they were hurt by it. But Montreal is banking on the contract's getting even better when the cap starts to go
and
up.
The other thing with Caulfield that I think you have to take into account too, and 8 years mattered a lot to the Habs in this negotiation. When this negotiation wasn't going as well, it was because Pat Brisson, Cole Caulfield's agent, was more fixated on 5 or 6 years, which is his firm CAA. That's a staple for them with a lot of these young guys coming out of the rookie deals. If you think about Patrick Kane, Crosby, Malkin, a lot of these guys went to five-year deals after their entry-level deal, which allowed them to re-dip at their peak again in their third deal. But the Habs eventually got their way. They had to bring the AAV up to a certain point to make it work for Cole Caulfield. The reason the term is so important for Montreal is, yes, Cole Caulfield has said all the right things this week, wants to be a Hab for life. And I believe he means it. Don't get me wrong. But things change sometimes over time. And what the Canadians have bought themselves here too is really some insurance on the asset where, you know, Matthew Tkachuk did a short 3-year deal for his second deal in Calgary. And he too loved playing in Calgary. And then his deal came back up last summer and we know what happened. American star players in Canadian markets. Cole Caulfield's an American star player in the Canadian market. You can't guarantee that it's always going to be a love affair and great to be a Montreal Canadian. A lot of stuff can happen. What if he has a poor offensive season? The fans are on him. Suddenly it's not fun being a Montreal Canadian in 3 years. Now the Canadians have a very controllable asset as opposed to going shorter and then having that pressure of the UFA clock starting earlier. So this was paramount, in my opinion, that the Canadians had got 8 years on Cole Caulfield for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah, and that's a reality. Absolutely. The American thing, like, we don't often talk about how, like, whether any Canadian or non-American born player doesn't want to play in the States. It's only a Canadian thing. How come it's never an American thing? Like, how come, like, oh, Mike Johnson, he's from Toronto. He doesn't want to play in, pick your city. Doesn't matter. We're in Florida and Vegas, in Florida or Vegas, whatever. Like, we never hear about that. Or a European player who doesn't want to be in Canada, or a European player who doesn't want to be, you might have a European player who doesn't want to play for a Canadian team, but it's not because it's in Canada. How come we don't hear about a European player saying, maybe because there's more teams, you don't have a choice because there's 3/4 of the league? I don't know. It's interesting, though, that we don't often hear the opposite. You know, Mike Johnson saying, I don't want to play in Colorado anymore because I want to go back to Canada. I think the core of it is
rooted in pressure and anonymity. I think that's what it's rooted in, right? Yeah. When things are bad, it's tough.
Taxes.
In the Canadian market.
Sorry.
Yeah, taxes. Yeah, oh, for sure.
Well,
for sure.
Get a good account. Yes. You can mitigate those taxes to like 2%. Let's not get yeah. carried away yeah. about the 13% tax difference. And I'll just say this from a guy who played in Toronto and Montreal, and I was never the best player on those teams, but I was good enough. Like, it's awesome to play in a Canadian market. Like, the good side, I played in Arizona and Tampa when Tampa was no good. Like, yeah. Trust me, I'd much rather have, like, you know, Pierre LeBrun saying Mike Johnson's no good for a stretch than play in Toronto or Montreal or a passionate Canadian market. Because yeah. the upside, when you're doing well and the team's doing well, is so much better than day-to-day when
Johnny,
you're not.
Where are the players walking around the league talking about how winning a Stanley Cup in Canada was like nothing you'll ever experience in sports and how you will walk as a... a superhero for the rest of your life. It hasn't happened.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it hasn't happened, right? Nobody's been to the top of that mountain in Canada, and those stories aren't out there right now.
Well, everyone's different. I'm sorry to jump. Everyone's different, so we've got to be careful we don't generalize. And listen, Brady Tkachuk signed a max deal in Ottawa. Cole Caulfield just signed a max deal in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So there are American stars willing to take a bet on it. But a comment from Matthew Tkachuk after Florida eliminated Toronto. I walked out down the hallway with Matthew that night, and I asked him about his buddies Marner and Matthews, right? And knowing what the fallout would be in the next few days in Toronto. And it was the lead of my column that night, and I will remember this for a long time. Matthew Tkachuk looked at me and said, those two guys, unless they win the cup here in Toronto, they will be crucified every year. He goes, not for me. I was like, that's how a guy like Matthew Tkachuk thinks. Mm. And so it depends what kind of, I just think there are some players, back to your point, Ryan, that being a Florida Panther for Matthew Tkachuk works a lot better for him than imagining what it'd be like to be playing for the Leafs.
Well, we've got Matthew Tkachuk as a topic coming up in our next segment, so we'll see. There'll probably be some criticism there. Guys, that was takeaways. Lots more to come here on the podcast. Stick with us. We'll break down the first couple of games of the Stanley Cup Final after the break. We want to tell you about a truly Canadian company. Cross Country Canada Supplies and Rentals provides equipment and supplies to all facets of the Canadian construction industry. But what sets them apart is their get-her-done attitude. It's a core value of their company. I've been to the offices. I've seen how they proudly display that on the wall at each branch. Every one of the staff members lives by the get-her-done formula to ensure they'll never let their customers down. They'll bend over backwards to get their clientele what they need when they need it. They don't make excuses. Cross Country Canada takes great pride in this attitude, and they truly believe that the success of their customer is their success. You can't get much more Canadian than that. All right, time now for the breakdown, brought to you by our good friends over at Liberty Smart Security, a company that specializes in having your back. High-quality advanced smart security systems for your home or your business, Liberty Smart Security uses leading-edge technology to protect the things that you value most in your life. Your home is your castle. Your business is also your castle. Protect it with Liberty Smart Security. And a reminder, they do all kinds of businesses as well. If you are a business owner looking to tighten up the security around your office, absolutely think about Liberty Smart Security. They've got great systems, great technology for your home or your business. Okay, Vegas, dominating performance in game number two. They take a commanding 2-0 lead in this series. Yes, Florida has been down a couple of games in these playoffs. I don't know, this feels maybe a little bit different based on the way that game went. Johnny, let's start with Matthew Tkachuk. Entered the final, 8 game winning points in 12 Panther victories. Remains tied for second in playoff points with 22. But implosion is the word that I want to use after what we've seen here. Game one, 2 roughing minors and a 10. Game two, a roughing minor, 2 tens. Is implosion too strong to describe his game?
Yeah, much. Much too strong to me, because I think the greater concern is the minors and not the misconducts. Like the misconduct with 4 minutes left in game one, that ship had sailed. He didn't care. He was trying to, you know, whatever, message send, which doesn't matter. But like, it wasn't like he was out of control. He picked the time in the game where it didn't matter. The misconducts in game two, which are terrible, of course, you're going to have Matthew Tkachuk not available to you for basically half the game. I mean, one was a crazy call where he tapped a guy's stick late in the game. They were handing out tens like candy. And the other one was after the massive hit on Jack Eichel, which was great if you're Florida. If you saw the Florida bench react after that hit, which was clean. I love both guys acknowledging it was clean. No problem, no hard feelings, just play. You know, I think the conversation with Matthew Tkachuk is not about composure or discipline. It's more about effectiveness, you know, when he's playing. And so I think the timing of the penalties were calculated by him. He wasn't running around out of control like, when the game was in the balance, taking penalties like that, that's not how it went. The bigger concern is, you know, he just hasn't had the puck a lot in the offensive zone. Like that's the concern for Florida and Matthew Tkachuk. Not that he took, if the game is 2-2 tomorrow night, he's not taking a 10-minute misconduct. I guarantee right. It will not happen. So I don't think that's probably fair to say, Pierre, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And you know, one of the things that I think has happened so far, we'll see if Florida can turn it around, is that Florida has been the team with the physical edge and the edgy play in their path here in these playoffs. You know, they got under the skins of the Bruins. You think of Linus Ullmark losing his mind on Tkachuk and that series shifting after that, in my opinion. Obviously, the Leafs, you know, could figure out what to do after the whistle with Florida. You know, Sam Bennett, Rocco Gudas. They've been the team that's been the sort of the bullies in these playoffs, and they've showed up to this final, and a bigger, more physical Vegas team said, oh yeah, bring it on. And bring it on with discipline, Vegas has shown. Turn the other cheek. Deliver some big hits. Ivan Barbashev said to Rocco Gudas, you want to hit me? Bring it on. So that's what I'm seeing so far. And again, it can change, but I think Florida has run into a bigger, more physical, imposing team than they've seen so far in these playoffs. And I think it's one of the reasons Matthew Tkachuk, aside from the fact that you get Jack Eichel skating out in the middle of the ice out of his zone, you're going to take that hit any day. I think he was trying to change the tempo of the series with that hit, because I think he sensed that they were being overmatched physically, which is probably a bit of a shock to the system for the Florida Panthers. Yeah. And at the end of the day, I don't know that it's going to make a difference. But that hit, and that's what I focused on in my column after game two, we're going to talk about that hit and see that hit on TV for many years, because it involved two superstar players, guys who like each other off the ice in real life. And it reminded me, in terms of the magnitude of two star players doing something that significant, of Iginla and LeCavalier dropping the gloves in the 0-4 Stanley Cup final. It's just, MJ, you were in the rink. I was in the rink the other night. When that hit happened, you're just like, that is nuts. Wow. I mean, that was an absolute wow moment. And even if Vegas ends up winning the cup here, or two wins away, that hit could outlast the memory of almost anything that happened in that series in terms of people still talking about in 20 years.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. Worth noting, I caught up with Jack Eichel quickly after the game. We were walking out. He was in the family area. We're like, I'm like, dude, are you okay? That was crazy. And he said, totally fine. The reason why he looked in so much pain was not his shoulder. He got winded.
Right.
He was trying to breathe, which we've all kind of been there if you played sports, whether you're playing soccer. We're like, you can't
that
breathe for a minute.
That was an awkward skate back to the bench. Hey? We were all going, what is happening?
Did he break his jaw? He was using his mouth because he was trying to get air in.
Looked like a fish out of water.
Yeah. And so that I'm like, that makes way more sense. And then he jokes, he's like, apparently I got the right surgery because my neck's fine. And I'm like, good, because that's what we were all worried about. You know, my goodness, hope you're okay. Yeah. And he was absolutely fine. So good for him. And you're right. Well, the challenge, I think, as we take it back to Florida, is that this idea that they're the physical, chippy, you know, toe-the-line group is so much part of their identity as a team. When it's not working, like, what do you do? It's a problem on two fronts. Like, you kind of have to do it because it's who you are and it's caused you trouble. And then when it's not working, it robs you a little bit of your mojo. Like, we're used to being the biggest kid in the sandbox, and now we're not, and it's not working. And so you can't abandon it, but you can't thrive off it either. Vegas has done a masterful job negating that part of Florida's game.
Do you guys have little brothers? Either of you guys?
No, I was the little brother.
And so, well, this might resonate with you then, Johnny. What it reminded me of is like my younger brother coming fighting mad, right? And just swinging and swinging and swinging. And me just with my hand on his forehead.
Right.
Holding him out of reach where he's just, none of his punches are landing. And I'm just, you know, you just put your hand on his head. And in some ways it feels like that. And it just makes them so much more upset, Pierre. There's nothing more frustrating than when you're trying to piss someone off and they're just looking at you smirking.
And for example, and you know what's getting under the skin of the Panthers, like Brandon Montour's penalty on Jonathan Marchessault, where he basically kind of roughed him up behind the head along the boards. That's not like Brandon Montour. He's a smart player, but that's frustration. Like, now you're trying to, you know, Marchessault scoring every game on you. Now you're trying to, you know, you're trying to send a message, but again, you're just going back to the box and giving Vegas a power play. So we're going to have to see a lot more discipline from Florida without losing their identity in game three. So it's going to be interesting. The other thing, and I think all three of us agree on this, I don't believe in copycat recipes to win championships. I think you can win in different ways in this league. But again, I think you'll see a lot of chatter if Vegas wins this cup about how big and physical
the
they are, and the big D are back. I'm telling you, like, it's just,
big and good.
Big and good,
not
exactly.
Not just big and good. Yes, exactly. Johnny, that's the difference.
Good players.
I also think,
I want big and good over small and good, but I want good over big. Right? Like, that's the conversation. But they are big and they are good, and it's a nightmare trying to get around that zone. Also worth noting, not that their fault, they have a $90-something million team on the ice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with Mark Stone's addition for the playoffs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but you know, they were, and I know Vegas has been hammered for that. But on the other hand, I would point out.
Not hammering them. It's just, I'm just pointing it out.
And I would say part of it. You know, Florida has dead money on the cap with Keith Yandle's buyout. Like, every team has sort of, I don't know. I've kind of grown past that discussion.
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. I'm not suggesting they did anything untowards, but had Mark Stone been healthy the whole time, Barbashev might not be on this team.
True.
You know, like this.
Notable.
This is the
that's,
stuff.
That's a great point because that guy's been making a huge difference. Talk and about. That space allowed them to make that deal.
Talk about the best UFAs and the weak crop this year. Barbashev might be playing himself into the number one UFA
big
this
time.
Summer. And Aiden Hill might be number two. Yeah. Like these two guys are playing themselves into some nice paydays, which I'm always happy about.
Jesse Granger did an article in The Athletic there, Pierre, trying to sort of dial in on Barbashev's value. And he used, you know, evolving hockey and some of the great sites out there for that. And it, sort of in that 3.7 to 4.5 range.
Ooh, that's light.
Kind of where they landed.
That's light.
You think that's even light, hey, Johnny?
Well, he had, what do you have 2 years ago? 24 goals? 54 points?
I think it's the lack of consistent offense. Because you love every other part of his game, right? But it's still a league where you pay for offense, you know? So that'd be interesting.
If he gets under $4 million, I will roll off, I'll fall off my chair on July 1st.
26 goals a couple seasons ago.
There you
10
go.
In 59 with St. Louis, and then 6 in 23 games with
Vegas. 16 this year.
16. Yeah.
Great playoff, though.
Who'd this season. Him or Michael Bunting, right? Like, you know.
The Quizmaster points out the number 9 has been an interesting factor so far. 9 Vegas Golden Knights have scored goals in the first 2 games. That is a playoff record. And there were 9 full days off between Florida qualifying for the Cup final and the Stanley Cup final.
Can't discount that.
Yeah, they were a team that had all kinds of mojo going, you know, and they were flowing and they were feeling it. And I don't know, Johnny, like 9 days off as a member of the Florida Panthers, I don't know, golfing, beaching, and I'm not blaming the players, but what's 9 days off like in Florida in the middle of one of the most intense tournaments there is in sports?
Feels like it's 3 days longer than they had off between Toronto and Carolina. Didn't hurt them then. You know, like, I mean, like they dealt with non-factor a pretty long for layoff. You then. I think of those two things, it's way more significant that Vegas has a team that's good enough that has 9 different goal scorers.
Right.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. The depth and the pace and the quality that Vegas has throughout their lineup has posed problems. They were always, Vegas was always going to have a better roster. I think everyone kind of sort of, you know, forwards check maybe for Vegas, defenseman check for Vegas, goaltender. Oh, double check for Florida. That was supposed to be the equalizer. Wow. I think, Unless you think this break affected Bobrovsky, and maybe it did because he was in such a rhythm, that then becomes a factor. But I think the depth is a big issue.
Mystic Mike reading my mind, because I guess what I would argue is that maybe the layoff hasn't hurt everyone on Florida. May have hurt the goalie because he just doesn't look the same. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to credit Vegas for and actually, I asked Bruce Cassidy after game one, not thinking I would get this kind of answer about what their prep was for Bobrovsky. I don't know if you heard the answer, MJ. He went into a very detailed answer about
High. He goes low.
It was unreal.
He goes wide. We got the puck up. Yeah.
Cassidy's not afraid to give some stuff up, man.
That's good.
But I think it may be that the one player that, you know, Bobrovsky was going, you know, playing every second day in a rhythm. Crazy, you know, goals saved above expected in the first 3 rounds, or at least since taking over midway through the Boston series. And then it just, I don't know. I mean, the goalies are, you know, creatures of their routine. And so I wonder if it's affected him.
How different is being down 2 in this series compared to what they faced against Boston, Johnny?
It probably doesn't feel any different. Boston had 130 points. Like, other than it's the cup. Other than it's the pressure of the final thing. Mm-hmm. And they've come so far and it feels like it's going to be daunting. But I mean, if they can certainly draw on the fact that we just beat a team like 20 points better than Vegas, like for 4 weeks ago in a similar situation. So they should draw confidence from it. I don't know if it, you know, if any team should believe it should be them because they just did this against presumably a better team than Vegas.
Yeah, I don't think it's over. Yeah. I don't think it's over, but I will finish this part of the final on this. If Vegas does go on to win the cup, I think it's undisputable in my mind that we'll look back and say that the cup was won in the Edmonton-Vegas series, in my opinion.
Cutting right to the heart of Oiler fan.
I mean,
I've been around town lots lately talking to people and they're watching this and it stings even more for Oiler fan because they see this happening and know how close they were.
The rare case.
Bit better goaltending.
When you lose the team that wins, you're actually like the second best team, even if it's not in the final, it might be that kind of situation.
Yeah. Great note for YEG there, Pierre. I'm sure Oilers fans will appreciate that one. Great podcast today, guys. I love it. Got your back, NHL, on location.
I did it.
The Stanley Cup final with you two. You did it. And Pierre, so for people,
camera works.
I sent Pierre a package, a technical package, so that he could get up with us on video from the Stanley Cup final. There was a 40-minute tutorial yesterday. And we can see you. We can hear you. It looks and sounds good. I'll be using it
on insider trading for TSN this evening. There you go.
There you go. Got Your Back is happy to share resources with TSN anytime. Johnny, do you choose two queens or were you just handed that?
Okay. Like, you know what? I'm glad you noticed.
Bed thing.
I was having a good start to my day. I walked in. If it was any other time than 3:30 last night, I would have gone right back downstairs. I hate two queens. Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? One. Two, unacceptable. Like every single reservation better say king, one king. I don't want two queens. It's ridiculous. Nice room, nice hotel.
Though, Johnny?
Don't like it.
Here's a hack, and not that you need a travel hack from me, but here's my belief, and I've covered many a playoff series as well. For the first 2 games, for games 1 and 2, you need a king. For games 3 and 4, you need a king because you're there for longer. Mm-hmm. When you start going 5, 6, 7 back and forth, You go with the two queens because the suitcase, you're now into a carry-on and it stays on the other bed. So games five, six, and seven,
the other queens thing, all the way.
I could walk you over here and show you my clothes and you would appreciate there'd be no chance in the world that goes in a carry-on. I got to hang up and unpack every time. So I just need a big closet and a king.
Every time, even for games five, six, and seven, you unpack entirely?
Got to hang my suits.
Suits only. Suits only.
Up in the closet here. And the thing I'll say about the two queens is this, is that if you're into the post-workout or post-lunch nap when you're on the road, you use one bed for the
dirty
nap,
bed and the clean bed.
And then you keep the other one clean for I'm just saying, you know,
you know what else I like to do?
You got a
sweaty showers.
Bed. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Pierre, hey, mix in a shower. Although, Johnny, something tells me you're sweating a little more after your workouts than he is after his. I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't buy it for a second. Right on. Guys, great job. Appreciate the time on the road. We'll check in again next week. That'll wrap the podcast, folks. Thanks so much for coming along for the ride here on Got Your Back. Thanks for your downloads and your subs. Hey, if you get a chance, leave us a review over on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the podcast. And thanks, as always, to our great sponsors, Cross Country Canada Supplies and Rentals, Kuma Outdoor Gear, and Liberty Smart Security. Enjoy the finals. We'll talk next week.